it. Bye-bye.
This is your Orioles Radio Network Game Rewind.
It's a great-looking Sunday afternoon. The Orioles and the Rays about to close out a four-game series. Game number 157 of 162. But this will be the final home game of this 2017 season. Ah, the good old days. Remember, they began the season on a four-game win streak at Camden Yards. In fact, they began 12-4 in the regular season. Well, today they close out the home campaign. And by the way, Dylan Bundy will not start today. Chris Tillman will. Bundy, he's got a hamstring injury, and he was a late scratch. The skipper, Buck Showalter, and the Geico Manager's Report right after this.
A lot has been made over the last 5 years, whether you made the playoffs or not, that you won the most games over those 5 years in the American League.
And, I didn't. You know, it didn't come out of my mouth.
That's why I said a lot was made, not from you.
Because.
But the question is that this year the organization won't be able to look back and say, hey, we haven't had a losing season in this long. If there's a good thing to come out of that, could it be an organizational sense of urgency?
Sure. But that should always be the case. You don't need that. And I've never taken victories for winning more games than you lose. There's only one thing you're trying to do here, and be the one of 30. That's it. You know, because of some of the struggles and for an extended period of time, there might have been, okay, but I always want to feel like whatever step we're taking is towards that final goal. And if you don't feel that way, then you've got to, if you want to call it a sense of urgency, I call it evaluate yourself with clear eyes and not rose-colored glasses, okay? Because it's pretty easy to tell where you are, because it's right in front of you, another dugout every day, and it's in the standings. And they don't lie. There's 162 games that don't tell. They don't tell lies. September tells you some lies. March tells you some lies, but the long season doesn't tell you any.
Buck, when you realistically look at the starting pitching now and in the future, and you have 3 to 4 guys who, you know, are free agents who may or may not, but likely probably.
Yeah, the other thing to look at, sorry, along that line, is the number of guys that are out of options next spring. Right. I kind of look at them in that same mode.
Right. So you put all that together. I mean, how do you go? I mean, we all know what the state of pitching is.
Right. So that's a good question for Dan. I mean, I'm going to manage the people that get here and try to make them as good as we can make them. And, that's why this is a conversation for another day, but y'all seem to want to talk about it today. You can tell I'm really excited to talk about it. But I know it has to be done. But I've got 6 games? 3, 4, 5. 6 games. You know, it's important. A lot of things, because those opportunities to see things, find out things are going to be gone here shortly. And then you're going to have to step back and do all those things. You know, I'm sure Dan's given it some thought, but, we've got some work to do.
So when you mentioned defensively, that personnel likely will be the same or close to the same.
Not necessarily.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, if you look at the numbers, you got a lot of the guys who appear to be coming back next year in key positions in third base and second base and first base, whatever. Is it then incumbent upon them to be better?
No, it's not. I'm not talking about – I'm talking about us as a group. As a group. I'm also – understand that we have more balls put in play than other teams do. We have more opportunities to make – miscues because there are more balls put in play against us. Okay, so there's constantly balls flying around, and, you know, relays. You know, you look at the throw that Austin Hayes made from right field, and he ends up getting an error on that ball. I guess they gave it to him, or those are team errors. You know, the catcher's got to take the chance, and that's one where nobody should get an error, but they do. I mean, those are something like that. But Bobby and Kerb look at them, and John look at these very closely, and they compare where we are each year. Because it's one of the things that we talked about when we got here is we could make a difference by putting a real emphasis on defense at the corners and the outfield, obviously everywhere else. And I just feel like we've gotten away from that a little bit. I mean, yes, in my opinion, that's one of the things that, you know, we talked about this spring, too. So there's just so much some guys can do physically. So far, you can take some of it. some things you have to come with. You have to bring with you.
The ball was hit last night that Hayes caught right field, and you, as you saw it, did you think it had?
You talking about the one that he fell down on, going towards, moving back towards center field, the pop up?
No, the one against the wall.
So let's, you know, let's take the whole picture in here. Buyer beware.
Great play. From your angle,
it's actually the way he was moving towards. I know he was going to make a bid on it, and I got a bad angle. I have to actually get up. Sometimes I don't want to look over there. It's funny to think that one of my thoughts was during the course of the next half inning, as his career goes on, will he still try to make that play? You know what I'm saying? The risk reward in a lot of different areas, and okay, if I take that ball off the fence, I probably am able to hold him to a single, and is it really worth it? It's kind of like blocking the plate years ago. When they told some of these guys, listen, you can block the plate and miss 100 games, or you can kind of give it a little bit and be here for 100 games. So that was my thought in the dugout, is I wonder if he'll do that 2-3 years from now, or if he'll think, 162, that one I probably need to back off of and not break my ankle. But it was pretty good.
In a moment, Angela Showalter, she will visit with Jim Hunter as we continue with our warm-up show this afternoon on the Orioles Radio Network.
On a beautiful day at Camden Yards, finale of the season series with the Rays in Baltimore. Three games next weekend at the Trop as the Orioles play their final home game of 2017. Angela Showalter after this on the Orioles Radio Network.
Orioles and Rays close out this four-game series, final home game of the year for the Orioles, and plan ahead, fans. On October 28th, it'll be the Kids Piece Trick-or-Trot 5K 1-mile walk. In fact, it is the 8th annual. Buck and Angela Showalter are very much behind this, visiting with Angela. And why is this charity so important to you and Buck, where every year you not only stay involved, you seem to increase your involvement?
You know, I was thinking today, kids are always an easy cause to embrace, you know, and wrap your arms around. But it's a cause that never will have a cure, unfortunately. There are always going to be children in foster care, and we always need parents to be foster care parents, and the reality of the kids who are in foster care when they age out need so much guidance and direction, not so much when they're young. I mean, it's also very important while they're younger, but the older they get and when they age out of the system, they still need a resource, and we try to educate them and prepare them for that.
Usually when somebody gets involved in a specific charity, there's something in their past that relates to that charity. Is there something in your past or Buck's past where foster children were prevalent and in your lives?
There was a short period of time when I was growing up around, say, 10, 11, 12 years of age. My parents decided to take in kids just on the weekend for respite care and just went and picked up. We started with a young man, and he was in a group home. He wasn't even with a foster care family. They basically, these kids... And it still exists today, group homes where kids are living basically like in an elementary school or a dormitory for young kids of, you know, varying ages. And they go there with a lot of times going in with nothing on their back. And they come out with literally everything they own in a garbage sack or whatever, just minimal stuff. And so they, you know, you uproot. And, of course, when you have kids of your own and you send them off to college, you realize, you know, that's the reality of you're sending your child off. But you're sending them off with a lot of stuff and a lot of love and support. But there are kids that are throughout the system in foster care like that. So that was my first experience with this, you know, having kids in our family and realizing, and I think what my parents wanted us to see how fortunate we were and how blessed. And it's one of those things that child impacted my life more than my family impacted his.
What is the best way for the community to help these children? Is it owning up and saying, okay, I'm going to welcome a child into my house? I mean, is that what it will take? Or is it just people like you making this aware that there is this issue? What is the best way somebody listening can help?
Well, there's many ways you can help. Obviously, opening up your home is first and foremost so important. There's a lot of education and training that goes with it because obviously these kids have gone through life and been failed once by not having either two parents, one parent, whatever those circumstances are. A lot of times these kids are removed in the middle of the night, you know, for some dire reason. So one, we need people to be ready on, you know, to stand there and be foster parents. If that's not what you're able to do financially, hiring kids, you know, kids that that are in foster care, we focus on therapeutic foster care. It's kind of like they come with this rap sheet. You know, and I've heard one of the kids one time, I was at something and they were talking about why she was in a foster care group home, and because they have to put them there a lot of times and then place them in a home to kind of get them stabilized. You know, they've experienced way too much. And she said, well, I have anger issues. Well, I can think of many people on any given day who have anger issues. So to be labeled, it's kind of like people coming out of the, you know, being incarcerated, they come out with a rap sheet and they're not bad kids. You know, they've just been born to bad circumstances. So that, you know, giving, you know, whether it's, you know, mentoring programs, obviously we'd love sponsors because we have the Keys program, which is where our older kids go and are educated and learn how to become, you know, to, you know, network. Or the Orioles have been great. They come and, you know, shadow here because they don't have the resources that are available to them. You know, computers, things like that. You know, people don't realize these kids, when it, you go to get a driver's license, you have to pay money for that.
Right.
You have to have insurance to apply for college. Cost money. So they don't have a support system. And so we teach them. They are given a stipend for classes they go to. It's put in kind of a reserve for them. And then they actually end up, have to give a little bit to another charity to pass it forward. But, I mean, even in just in the job marketplace, we did a job fair for some of these of our kids. And it was amazing. They weren't setting out for the sun, the moon, the stars. I want to be a Major League Baseball player. They just wanted a job, and they were looking for ones that they were passionate about.
And I'm guessing that your event, which grows every year, which is wonderful, the funds are one thing, but it's the awareness, I think, in the community. If you could get one family each year to take another child, you've succeeded.
Oh, that's it. And then it carries such weight with the youth, ones that come out, is it really is such a heartwarming thing that they look out, and we've heard this repeated by our youth before. Everyone came out here for us, you know, because they, and it gives me goosebumps when I say that, because isn't it what everybody wants to feel loved and needed, and that carries so much weight, and that might be enough just to carry them through to be determined. You know, it's kind of one of those things that no one really wants to talk about, and you look around and you see all these pet adoptions and people are lined up out the street, which, you know, you and I both are big, huge animal people. It's so important, but we for our kids in our country and our country alone and the city of, you know, Baltimore, how many kids are in foster care and need families?
All right, hello again, baseball fans. Joe Angel and Jim Hunter back at Camden Yards after the season finale at Oriole Park. And it's in the win column as they beat Tampa Bay. So a big day for the Orioles and a big day for J.J. Hardy. If he does go out, what a good way to go out today for J.J., who offensively hit a big two-run home run. He also singled. He also made several defensive plays, as usual, flawlessly. And J.J. today was honored by several standing ovations from a very appreciative crowd. So a big day for J.J., big day for the Orioles, as they beat Tampa Bay by a score of 9-4. And it was a 9-4 final. The Orioles here today, they out-hit Tampa Bay 13-10. And each team had two home runs here today. Kiermaier hit one against Tillman to get the game started. And Jesus Sucre with a two-run home run to tie the game in the second inning. Along the way, J.J. Hardy with a home run came with a man aboard. It put the Orioles ahead. And then Chan Cisco with his second Major League home run. Orioles win it by 5 as they win the finale 9-4. Well, the game started for Chris Tillman, who got a surprise start, kind of an emergency start today, because Dylan Bundy, because of a hamstring injury, was a late scratch. And so Tillman started the game. And when the game started, Kevin Kiermaier went up there to hit, looking for a fastball, and he got exactly what he was looking for. Kiermaier, drive to deep right center. This ball is way back there, and there's an ambush. Now, there's an ambush job right there. Kiermaier sitting on a fastball, and Tillman gave it to him, and Kiermaier wailed on it and hits one out. So after one pitch, it's a 1-0 Tampa Bay lead. Kiermaier, his 15th home run. My goodness. Yeah, one pitch. 1-0 Tampa Bay. After that, Tillman got a big double play ball to end the first inning. And then came the bottom of the first inning when the Orioles had almost an immediate answer. One out, bases empty. Manny Machado got a single. And then Scope, he came up. He singled. There were two on base. And then Adam Jones came up. Fastball line drive down the right field line. That's a fair ball in the corner. Here comes Manny. He scores. Here comes Scope. Dickerson waving him in. And the throw comes into second base. So Scope has scored. Adam Jones, a two-run double. It is 2-1 Baltimore in the first inning. So Adam Jones, RBIs number 72 and 73. Chris Archer, at that point, was not a mystery. And then Chris Davis continued it. The count 2-2. Here it comes. Davis, ground ball swept into right center. Right through the shift. Here comes Adam. Here comes the throw. On a hop, it's too late. So Davis picks up an RBI with a single as he hit the ball through the shift. It is now 3-1 Orioles in the first inning. And then Austin Hayes, a ground out, out number two. And then El Toro came up to hit. Alvarez lines it up toward right after base hit. That ball right past the second baseman. So here comes the big fella at third. Davis comes in to score. Alvarez, the two-out single. It is now 4-1 Orioles in the first inning. So the Orioles off to a good start today, 4-1. In the on-deck circle was J.J. Hardy and Ryan Wagner with his now famous introduction of J.J. here at Camden Yards. Hardy, 7 years an Oriole, all beginning in 2010, one of the great pros. And today, J.J. Hardy could have been his final game as the Orioles shortstop at Camden Yards. He was introduced, and the fans reacted. J.J. Hardy, his first at-bat today, maybe his final game as an Oriole. Here at Camden Yards, the fans are standing. They're giving J.J. a standing ovation. His teammates are up in the dugout. They're giving him a standing ovation. J.J. Hardy, a truly great Oriole, is being saluted at Camden Yards, and now he salutes right back. He takes a wave toward the crowd. He takes a thankful glance toward the Oriole dugout to his teammates. Yeah, J.J. being honored by Camden Yards in what could be his final game here as an Oriole. So a great day for J.J. and just a lot of fun to watch. The way they love J.J. Hardy. Here's teammates, the fans. J.J. Hardy. And he would have a big day today. Orioles got four runs in that first inning to open up a 4-1 lead. But then Tillman gave it right back in the second inning, a double by Echevarria, and then Miller, an RBI single, and then the catcher, Jesus Sucre, came up to hit. So now the 2-1 delivery, Sucre, fly ball, left field. Trey Mancini said goodbye to that one. It's back about 15 rows into the gap in left center. So there's your 2-run home run, and there's a tie. They already second inning. We're starting over again. My goodness. So Echevarria with a double, and then Miller with a single, and then Sucre with a two-run homer. And it's a 4-4 game. Well, Tillman today, four innings, four runs, six hits, a walk, and a couple of strikeouts, but he winds up with a no decision. So tie game until the bottom of the fourth inning, when Alvarez was on base on a two-base error, and then, yeah, you got it, J.J. Hardy came up to hit.
The 3-2 pitch, swing and a high fly ball. Deep left field, did he do it? Back it goes and gone for J.J. Hardy. Go out with a flash, J.J.
There you go, just under 24,000 fans here at Camden Yards on the Sunday afternoon. And again, several times they gave J.J. a standing ovation, but J.J. wasn't done yet. In the sixth inning, with one out, the bases empty, he came up again and he singled. So he winds up with a two-hit game, and then Cisco came up to hit the youngster. He had a big day as well.
And the pitch, swinging a high fly ball right center field. Back it goes, Malik Smith on the warning track, at the wall, and that ball is gone. Chance Cisco hits it out. His second big league home run, and the Orioles now lead it 8-4. Oh, the rookie can hit. He's now 4-for-7 as a big leaguer with two home runs. And he now has three RBIs, and the Orioles add to their lead.
So, yeah, you got to take a chance on Cisco, and the kid looks good. Well, wait, see, next year, spring training, we'll have to wait and see what happens. But, yep, he's off to a good start, just as Austin Hayes is off to a good start as well. We mentioned Tillman, four innings. We saw Donnie Hart, We saw Michael Givens. He went 1 2/3 scoreless. We saw Blyer came in. He got to did a good job out of the bullpen as he came on in the seventh inning, got two outs. And then Darren O'Day came in, and he went the final two. And Darren O'Day trying to end the home season as Duda waits. 1-2 pitch on the way. Popped it up. And again, back of the plate. Cisco's got a play on the warning track. He makes a one-handed catch. Ball game is over. And the Orioles' season at home is now history. They wind up 11 games over 500 in the games they played at Camden Yards. So overall, the season has been very disappointing, but at Camden Yards, hey, they got a winning record in the win column again. They began the season with four consecutive victories at home. Remember, they got off to a 12-4 start this year, and they end the season in the win column. Nice to be home, and now we hit the road one more time. Jim Hunter in a moment on the Orioles Radio Network.
Jim Hunter back at Camden Yards as the Orioles win the final home game of the regular season. They beat Tampa Bay 9-4, so the Birds finish up 46-35 at Camden Yards. Now head out on the road for the final five games beginning Tuesday in Pittsburgh. Two-game series there, three-game series next weekend in Tampa Bay. But today, there's no doubt about it, the storyline here about J.J. Hardy likely playing his final game as an Oriole at Camden Yards. He had a huge day, two-run home run in the fourth. He also singled and scored in the sixth. And following the game, J.J. Hardy, the walk-off interview on Masson with Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer.
J.J., did your teammates get you? Did they surprise you when you came up for that first at bat?
Yeah, I had no idea that was going to happen. You know, the fans were great. I looked over at the dugout. A few guys were standing out. I got a little bit of emotional, for sure.
You know, I was talking, I played a lot of great shortstops behind me and, you know, guys that end up in the Hall of Fame and guys that won eight gold gloves, like Mark Belanger. Where did you get, you know, I was trying to talk today, you know, you hit all these home runs, you make all the plays, you won three gold gloves, but you're not a very demonstrative guy. Where does that come from? You just play the game kind of old school. There's not a whole lot of muss or fuss.
I don't know. It's the way I've always done it. I think it started in Little League. If I made an error in Little League, I would get pissed off at myself, I think, more than most. So rather than being flashy, I just tried to make the plays, and I didn't care what I looked like.
J.J., what's in your mind for the future here?
I don't know. I still believe I can play. I don't know what's going to happen after this season ends, but, you know, I'll have to sit down and see what some options are.
Want to ask him anything else?
Well, no, I just want to let me just ask you one thing. You know, I look at Chris Archer, and I look at the numbers and whatever. I mean, you're hitting over 300 against him, never hit a home run. I don't know if it's divine fate. He throws you a slider. I mean, what's it like to hit off him? Because he doesn't win a lot of games, but he is a power guy. I mean, he usually strikes out around 250. Well, what's it like, and then to be able to kind of get the pitch that you hit for a home run?
I'll tell you, you tell me I got good numbers off him, but I wouldn't know it unless I looked at it, because I feel like he strikes me out every time. I mean, he's got a really good fastball, a slider that's invisible at times, and it's 90-plus miles an hour. So, I didn't realize that I hit him as well as I have.
I will ask you one final one, though, because I'm interested in this. Whenever you are done playing on the field, would you like to manage?
That's another thing that I'll have to think about. I don't know. I mean, right now I'm still thinking I can play, and then I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
All right. Well, a great bridge cross today. Congratulations.
Thanks.
On a great day.
Thank you.
All right, J.J. Hardy on Masson with Gary and Jim as the Orioles beat the Tampa Bay Rays 9-4. Jim Hunter back at Camden Yards, where the Orioles win it by a final of 9-4 on a big day for J.J. Hardy and likely his final home game as an Oriole. Two-run home run, single, couple of runs scored. He went 2-for-4 and, as usual, flawless in the field. Time to hear from the skipper. Let's head downstairs. Post-game comments from Buck Showalter.
You talked about taking in moments. J.J. Hardy today, the ovation and then the home run. What's going through your mind?
Yeah, we kind of snuck that in behind JJ's back, because I know what he would have said if he'd known it was coming. Almost took him out of the game with two outs in the ninth, but I think he wanted to be out there. It's one of those things where, you know, when he hits a home run, we go in the dugout going, really? You know, and I don't think it surprised anybody. JJ's delivered a lot of things the team needs over the course of his time here. We'll see what the future brings. It's one of those guys, a lot of people say you won't know how good he was till he's gone. I think everybody here knows
how good he was and how good he is. And he's got some good baseball ahead of him. You think about JJ, you think about the word efficient, trustworthy, impactful to his teammates. You know, he's we're very lucky to have had him pass our way. We'll see what the future brings. He's played a big part in the culture, I think. You know, he talked to Jonathan and Manny and even Beck and Chris and people along the way that he's impacted. I think the greatest compliment, you know, Brady and I were talking about him, that he's probably the only guy I've ever seen that reminds you of Cal at shortstop defensively. You know, you always go, you know, they're able to get to balls with their brain as well as their hands, if that makes any sense.
You've often said of him sort of his substance was his style. And a very difficult year for him. He never complained, did he?
No. Jay, there's not a day Jay doesn't wake up and realize how fortunate he is, how lucky he is, and to have come to Baltimore. A place where people really get what he brings. There's a play, a spinning, sharp ground ball off the left-hander with a pull swing. Hits off the middle of the bat with a little tardy, and it's going towards him up the middle. It's spinning, and I guarantee everybody in the ballpark thought it was a routine play. It was a really hard play. And I can't tell how many times over his tenure here I've said to him standing in the hole, you know, third hitter up in the inning, I said, how many people think really realize how hard that play was? He goes, me, you, Bobby, Manny, John. But JJ never, you know, he never wants the attention taken away from the team. He's the ultimate teammate.
Like, you were surprised that, I don't know, Bundy's hamstring, obviously you didn't know about it until late. What's up with that, and do you think that he'll be able to pitch again this year?
Well, you know, I know there's probably some people trying to read something into it. I wish, you know, I had some apprehension, quite frankly, about pitching him today. You know, I was going to pitch him five innings only. And, in fact, Roger and I tossed and turned on it the last few days, and especially after we got eliminated last night. So I got to tell you, in a way, it was a blessing. And I'm not going to – it's not embarrassing. The guy's – it really cramped up. He strained it. He slipped, you know, in his preparation, things pitchers do, warming up. They start about 11:30, 12, going through some things they do every time. And it knotted up on him. I mean, it kind of spasmed up on him. And so, it kind of worked out well, because I really wanted to get Chris out there for another start and put our bullpen a little bit in a tough spot, having to take Chris out of there, having any length. But you know, everybody that we brought in did their job. Michael was key today, I thought.
Buck, as good as a day as it was for JJ, do you feel for Chris that he didn't get that same ability to get the ovation from the fans?
Well, like I said, let's see what the future brings for both those guys.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, they got some good baseball ahead of them, both of them. And you never know. This game has a funny way, you know, it's that time of year where I don't say goodbye, I say see you later, and I'm really, really bad at goodbyes, especially to people that you've gone through the things that, you know, you've gone through with Chris and JJ. You know, we kind of went through this together here.
Reading between the lines and kind of following up what David asked, as far as Bundy is concerned, I mean, is this it for him then?
It's like Zach, I'm not going to go ahead I'll tell you, you know, he's very close to where, you know, I was willing to take him to be ready to pitch in the playoffs. You know, so, you know, I can show you the charts that we had mapped out since spring, and he's right on the button. That's why today was a little bit of a stretch. But he really wanted to pitch, and we were going to really watch him. So I got to tell you, there's a part of me breathed a little sigh of relief when he didn't pitch today, to be frank with you. What were you going to ask?
Same thing as Dan.
What about Adam left with the same stuff that he's been suffering?
I talked to Adam 20 times this year. I respect for him and knowing some of the physical challenges that you go through and he's going through. And last night, I don't know, it was about 12:31, I texted him and got back to me this morning, which meant that he was asleep, I guess, I hope. And with those two young boys, he was asleep. So he wanted to play today. He wanted to play today for the fans as much as anything. And I think that's he was scuffling. You know, it's same thing that that's been bothering him since really off and on for the last couple of months. But if that trip to Toronto, and of course we're headed to Tampa eventually, and for some reason playing interleague play for 2 days. I've been watching Ulloa hit the last couple of days. It's not pretty. But I'm sure somebody's going to go, I don't know if I'm going to game or not today. By the way, Ulloa's hitting. Let's go, honey.
You mentioned wanting to see Chan Cisco catch a game like this with the atmosphere and, you know, Archer. What was your impression?
Well, you know, I'm getting ready to talk to the pitchers a little bit that I trust. You know, Darren, I have a good take on it. Of course, John, there's not a better catch instructor in baseball than John Russell. And I thought what I noticed was that I didn't notice him. You know what I'm saying? And, in fact, I'm getting ready to call Gary Cederstrom. I know Gary to see what he thought. Some from umpire's perspective, but if he says he was terrible, I still like him. But John's not. I don't think he will. And I thought he presented himself well. You know, Chris is quick to the plate. They don't run much on him. And the pop-up was tough. Thought he was pretty calm with that. Waited a long time to throw his mask away and didn't let it drift on him like a lot of guys get too far under it. They do a drill in the spring where they. Once they ask for their glove, they can't. It's like a pivot foot. You can't move more than a pivot foot to catch it. So they wait. John was pretty proud of that drill because it keeps you, see if you can make a good evaluation when it's coming out and where it's going to be. When they first start out, they're always off, and it's a way to teach them that it drifts to this direction. So they make their call too quick for their glove, and they're partner hands him the glove. I don't know why I got off on that. I guess I'm bragging about John's drills. But
since you're not sure on Bundy, is there?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Okay, y'all know I am. Yeah, but if he comes in and fights tooth and nail, I'd be surprised if he pitches again. But I'll never say never.
So absent him, does Tillman have a chance to start again?
Sure. Right now, with Gauz's last start will be Tuesday. So, you know, Saturday, Sunday, we've got some options. Problem is some of the options we have to use in the pen to get to it. You know, whether it's a Mike Wright, whether it's a Tillman, whether it's a couple other guys. So, you know, we may add a pitcher from the mini camp down there for Pittsburgh and Tampa because we're a little short down there.
For relief help?
Yes. Yeah. The start will come from here. It could change. If we get into a 16-inning game or something, it could change.
What did you think of Tillman overall? I know he had the two home runs. But
you know what? The last inning, you know, he was saying, you know, Chris was great. You know, it was right up his alley. Team needs me. Let's go. And had 7 days off, you know, not one whimper about anything. And he said, I'm fine to keep going. You know, 60-something pitches and after 7 days off. I thought his last inning was Chris. I did. You know, he located some fastballs. In fact, he set up the runway and said, that there it was. He said, I finally got it. I thought each inning got a little bit better. Got a little bit better. He's going to be a good pitcher next year. Pardon?
How much has his confidence been affected?
Oh, sure.
Are
you kidding me?
Yeah.
His confidence, your confidence in what he's going to bring, I mean, they're human beings. And when you've gone through the successes that Chris has gone through here, it's even more painful. And it's painful to watch him because you know how much it means to him. So there's a lot of things he couldn't do this offseason that he normally does to prepare. And we've talked about it numerous times. He's going to take very little time off, and he's going to get after it because he's not going to want to go through this again. I know that. Okay.
All right, post-game comments from Buck Showalter as the Orioles beat Tampa Bay by a final of 9-4. Now,